All right, now we are ready in case 18-6221. Mr. Pincus, if through the graciousness of your hearts, any counsel in the courtroom is willing to cede additional time when you've made your points, the court will graciously accept it.
May it please the court, my name is Howard Pincus from the Federal Public Defender, and I represent Shane Young. By the time he was interrogated by Special Agent Brown, Mr. Young had already admitted to possessing 3.5 grams of methamphetamine. The agent promised Mr. Young that any truthful statements he made about his drug activity would reduce the time he would serve in federal prison. This assurance that there was no cost of disclosure and that Mr. Young could only be better off by admitting his involvement in drug activity made his statements involuntary. This court should vacate the district court's suppression order, order the statements suppressed, and remand for further proceedings. The district court recognized that the agent in fact made a promise of leniency. The agent told Mr. Young that he had spoken to the judge, that the judge would charge us as either a 5-year case to as much as a 10-year case, and that every truthful statement he made would literally take time off what he would serve in federal prison.
The agent later said, oh, that was a misspeak. I didn't mean the judge, I meant the AUSA. Is there any evidence of that, or what is your position on that
point? Well, the judge found that, the judge didn't actually resolve that, but he said, regardless, what he clearly said was the judge. And you have to look at it from Mr. Young's point of view, and Mr. Young, who had no prior experience in the federal system, would take it as a promise that he had spoken to the judge. And that's clearly what the agent said. Whatever was in his mind was not what he said to Mr. Young. And in fact, he said judge several times, and he also said prosecutor another time. So in context, it's very clear that he was speaking about what the judge had agreed to, regardless of what he may have meant to say. We have to look at what he, in fact, did say.
He did get some benefit, though. He got 3 levels for acceptance, which is down from 262 to 188 months.
He did get that, and he would have gotten that in any event. But
only if he admitted the 80 or the 93 grams.
If he had pled to the conduct, but what he was looking at, and whether he would have pled in the first instance, was changed by what he actually admitted to during the statements, during the interrogation. And of course, that just shows how false what the agent told him was. The agent said this was a 5 to 10 year case. It wasn't under any reading, unless the 3.5 grams was just simple possession. Otherwise, Mr. Young was a career offender, was looking at least 151 months, and as it played out with the higher amount of methamphetamine, 188 months at a minimum after acceptance.
Well, there are confessions and then there are confessions. This one, what he admitted was the extra methamphetamine.
Which was what the agent really wanted him to admit to. Without that, there was just a 3.5 grams of meth. Could have been just simple possession. It may not even have been charged. Well, we know it was charged federally, but it helped the government establish its case.
Well, the extra methamphetamine, the large amount, was found right by his shoe where he scaled the fence and so forth. It's a pretty hard defense, isn't it, to say the methamphetamine wasn't connected to him. Do we consider that as part of all of this in weighing whether his will was overcome, just the obviousness of the case?
We don't. And in fact, what Mr. Young repeatedly said, or what he said during the interrogation, was this is in a dope dealer's front yard. I don't know why everybody's trying to get me to admit to it. They tried to get him to admit to it at the state interrogation just before, a day or two before the federal interrogation. It was clearly the focus, what Special Agent Brown wanted him to admit to. He gave as an example of owning to the information as something that could only benefit Mr. Young, saying that he had tossed that bag. He claimed it was on a dash cam. We don't know. The dash cam was not part of the record. The pre-sentence report author didn't take the same view of it that the prosecutor did. But regardless of what that how the case would have played out without these statements, we have to look at whether these statements were involuntary. And Mr. Young...
Let's assume we agree with you. What relief do you seek?
Well, we seek...
Do we remand for resentencing, not just for resentencing, but for retrial on the one charge that he contests?
Well, we remand for further proceedings, which would give him the opportunity. We asked in the brief that the sentence, be, the conviction be vacated. What really should be is, since it's a conditional guilty plea, remand for further proceedings. Mr. Young can decide whether to withdraw his guilty plea. And if he does, then the case would proceed without the statements about the 94 grams and all of the other statements that Mr. Young made.
In which case he would not get credit for cooperation. He would stand a stiffer sentence. He's aware of that?
That is his choice, of course, on remand, whether he wants to proceed to trial. And he filed a suppression motion seeking to have those statements suppressed and seeking to go to trial only with what the government, what the evidence that was found in the yard. But he shouldn't be...
Namely, what Judge Phillips notes, that the evidence is evident, the presumption great.
Well, we don't know how strong the evidence. None of the discovery is here. There's police statements. But Mr. Young is saying, that wasn't me. If you have it on dash cam video so clearly, why are you trying to get me to admit it? And in fact, what the prior state interrogation shows is just how this, the agent's promises here, his false promises, coerced the statements out of Mr. Young. When without the prior promises, or the promises of leniency at the state interrogation, Mr. Young, as soon as he was asked about the 94 grams and was told it was on dash cam, said, no, and I don't want to speak about it anymore. Here, the agent made these promises of leniency, confronted him about it, and Mr. Young, in an anguished state, as you can see very clearly from the video, eventually confessed.
Well, his will was not overborne as far as allowing them to look at his telephone.
Well, that was much later in the interrogation, after he had already confessed to not only the 94 grams, but other drug activity.
Precisely. And because he'd already confessed to that, you would think that he would give everything up. But he didn't. He said, you can't look at my telephone. And he also, in the interview, before he acknowledged the 93 grams, mused to himself, maybe he should have an attorney there, followed by some silence. He knew that he could have an attorney there.
He did know, but he also was under the... He had been repeatedly promised that nothing's going to hurt you. And the fact that he was... may have had some residual doubt about whether the agent would follow through on the promise doesn't mean that the promises didn't have the effect. We know they had the effect from what the prior interrogation looked like. We know they had the effect because he spoke right after that. And in fact, Mr. Young, as it turned out, had good reason to doubt the promises of the agent because the agent didn't follow through on them. They were false promises and they were never going to be followed through on. As for the phone, a couple of points about that. First of all, a phone can, well, we said in the briefing that at that point there was discussion about broader relief that Mr. Young wanted, not going to prison at all. That actually came later in the interrogation, so I apologize for that. We also indicated that it was about the statements only went to, he may have thought they only went to his drug activity on the 16th. In fact, agent's promise was clear as to extending to any drug involvement by Mr. Young. But there's good reason why Mr. Young might not want the agents to rummage through his phone. As the Supreme Court recognized in Riley, cell phones these days contain a vast trove of information, many of it very personal and intimate. We don't know what was on the phone. There may have been other activity he didn't want the agents to know about because he was embarrassed, because he feared what consequences it could have for him. He was very forthright throughout the interrogation, as you can see, about his involvement and speaking with the agents, answering all their questions. The government can only come up with two examples to the contrary, one being about the phone, the other being about when he was asked, who do you sell to? Other than that, he was very forthright with the agents, and the fact that he didn't want the agents to look through his phone with all of the information that could be on the phone doesn't tell us anything about whether his will was overborne much earlier, and it doesn't show that he was not that he was able to exercise free will as to whether to speak or not. This is exactly like this court's cases in Lopez and Sharp, where there's no cost to disclosure, as in Sharp, or a huge benefit, as in Lopez. And this court has said that those types of promises of leniency are enough to or can coerce a confession out of somebody. Well, now, of course, the district court, besides the phone, looked to things like Mr. Young's age, the fact that he was received Miranda warnings, the fact that the questioning wasn't too long and was friendly, and the fact that he had prior experience with the criminal justice system. A lot of those factors are things that were also present in Lopez and Sharp and did not persuade this court not to suppress the statements there. And in fact, some of these factors actually worked with the agent's tactics. If the agent is trying to, the agent repeatedly said, "You can trust me, I'm on your side." He was trying to tell Mr. Young that he was the person who knew about the federal system and that Mr. Young could believe in him. Of course, in that situation, he's going to be friendly. This is not a situation where he's trying to browbeat a confession out of Mr. Young. The fact that he was friendly actually played into his position that I'm on your side and you can trust me. And the fact that Mr. Young had prior experience with the state system, there's no evidence that he had any prior experience with the federal system, and that's what the agent used to his advantage. He said, "Look, you can trust me. This is how it works in federal court. You may not know this. It may not sound like much, but this is how it works. The judge is going to take time off," and he emphasized it with hand gestures. "Every truthful statement you make will literally buy down the time you will serve it in prison."
Does the record reflect whether Mr. Young was offered and participated in a formal proffer by which he may get substantial assistance?
I don't believe that it does, Your Honor. Right. So given all this, the totality of the circumstances, which this court reviews de novo to determine whether the statements were voluntary, shows that they were in fact involuntary and were coerced by the agent's false promises. This court should vacate the district court's contrary order, order the statements suppressed as involuntary, and remand for further proceedings, at which point Mr. Young, if he so chooses, can withdraw his guilty plea. Thank you.
May it please the court, Stephen Krager on behalf of the United States. Special Agent Brown crossed the line. The government admits it. He made a promise of leniency, and the district court probably found that he should not have made those promises.
How do you distinguish this case from Lopez?
Well, Your Honor, first of all,
different names.
Yes, Your Honor, there are different names. But the first thing I would point to is in Lopez, this court made a very big point of the fact that in addition to the promises of leniency, there were misstatements about the strength of the government's case. There were no statements there were no misstatements about the strength of the government's case. There was a video. As the PSR pointed out, the video showed that he had possession of the bag before he went behind the car, and then he didn't have a possession of the bag whenever he continued running away from the car. There was some dispute about whether he actually threw the drug or whether.
So, are you saying since he's really guilty, that we don't have to worry about the promise that the judge was going to help him out?
Well, Your Honor, it's one factor that the court considers. Correct, one factor. But this court, in looking at the totality of the circumstances in Lopez, explained that it was both the promise of leniency and the fact that the defendant, or that the police lied about the strength of the case. Those two factors working together is what made it, what overbore the will of the person. But beyond that, what we have here that differentiates this case from Lopez and from Sharp and from the other cases where this court has held that the statements were involuntary is the fact that we have Mr. Young specifically saying what was on his mind, what was going through his mind when he heard these promises of leniency. We can tell, because we know what he said, and he was saying what he thought, that he calculated the costs. We know this because after the promise of leniency, but before he made any confession, He mused, as Judge Phillips pointed out, that maybe I should get a lawyer. He then mused whether...
Why do you need a lawyer if the judge has already been talked to and has agreed that you can buy down his sentence? You don't need a lawyer if you've got that kind of a deal.
And, Your Honor, if he truly believed that if he was fully going towards that promise of leniency and putting his hope in that promise of leniency, then he wouldn't need to muse about a lawyer. The fact that he's musing, do I need a lawyer, shows that his will is not being overborne. But in addition to that, and the lawyer,
Should Mr. Pincus worry if we tell you not to worry, we're going to help you out? We're your friends.
If you were to tell me not to worry, Your Honor, if you were to say not to
help you out, we're your friends.
Your Honor, if you would say that, at least to me, whether he should worry or not, I don't know. If you were to say that to me, I would still be nervous and I would still be presenting my case.
would you still be nervous? You're more nervous if, in addition, he said, oh, I've been to the judge too. And the judge said,
It would lessen my concern, admittedly, yeah, but sure it would be a factor. Yeah. But I wouldn't just sit on my laurels, and if you were to tell me that I shouldn't worry, I wouldn't say, despite what Judge Lucero said at the beginning, that the court would be happy for me to see back as much time as I could. I wouldn't just go back and sit down in the chair. I would continue to make my argument because I want to make sure that my will wouldn't be overborne by you saying,
got it,
don't worry.
Do you think the fact you went to law school might enter into that decision?
Honestly, I think the fact that I went to law school would make me less worried, more worried than less worried.
Was the FBI agent's interview here in concert with your office, or was he just off on his own?
My understanding is he had presented the charges, and we had signed off on the complaint, which is how he got the arrest warrant. Nobody from our office was at the interview, and I'm not sure. I don't think we specifically told him to do that. In fact, in conversations I've had, now this is beyond the record, but in conversations I've had with the trial court AUSA, as this appeal was going on, it was made very clear to Special Agent Brown that what he said was not appropriate. But
so if we agree with Mr. Pincus, what is the relief that we grant?
I would agree with Mr. Pincus that the court would vacate the conviction, remand it, and under the Rule 11 standard, he would have the option of withdrawing his plea.
All right. Thank you.
Do you have an 851 enhancement in your back pocket?
I would have to check. I would think there probably would be.
Which would be 20 years mandatory minimum if convicted of the more than 50 grams of methamphetamine.
I believe so, Your Honor.
All right.
What would be the consequence to criminal practice generally if we were to agree with you and agree with Judge Heaton and just give this our blessing? Say, oh, well, it shouldn't do some hortatory language, but go ahead and affirm Heaton's ruling.
Well, Your Honor, I wouldn't suggest it would
move. That's a loaded question. It's intended to be. It's a terrible practice, isn't it? We're just basically saying you can go, the prosecution can, or the FBI can tell defendants that they've spoken to the judge and the judge is right on target. He's going to help him. Whoa.
And, Your Honor, if that was the opinion, I admit that would be a very radical endorsement, but court doesn't.
It's almost like would be a radical ruling from us.
I admit that giving this court's blessing to what Special Agent Brown did would be a radical ruling, and that I'm not here to ask this court to give its blessing, and I would fully anticipate that this court might have some strong words to say about what Special Agent Brown said. But this court and the Supreme Court have said that the use of coercive language, the use of promises of leniency, is a necessary factor for an involuntary confession, but it's not sufficient. And while we've spoken a lot, and while Mr. Pincus bases his entire argument essentially on what Special Agent Brown said, the question here is really, was the statement voluntary? And what this court could say is, maybe in a different case, where we don't know what Mr. Young had said, then this case would have turned out differently. But what we know is before he confessed, but after the promise of leniency, he mused that he might be buying the farm by making this confession. We know that immediately after he made the confession, that he asked if he was ever going to get out of jail or prison. This is not the, oh, I'm going from 10 years to 5 years. He knew that there was a cost to this disclosure. He knew that instead of moving the needle from 10 years to 5 years, he moved the needle from 10 years up to some unknown portion. But beyond that, and this goes back to what one thing Judge Phillips said and one thing that Mr. Pincus said, he knew that he could not, that he could shut his mouth. If what Mr. Pincus has suggested to this court is correct, then the truthful thing about who his supplier is, the truthful thing about giving permission to his phone, would have been things that he would have been like, oh, that's going to buy down my time. But as Mr. Pincus pointed out, he knew that there would have been a cost to that disclosure. There might have been a cost, at least on the cell phone, to that disclosure, because there might have been crimes that the police didn't know about. And beyond that, the things that he gave up were things that the police knew. But this court, but in the end, I would submit that this court looked not just at the one factor of what the nature of the questioning, but this court looked at what Mr. Young said. But in addition to that, things that Mr. Pincus has suggested this court just ignore are the very things that this court and the Supreme Court have said courts have to look at in determining whether or not the confession was voluntary. Things like the age, the intelligence, and the education of the defendant. Here, Mr. Young is a 43-year-old man. He had experience with the criminal justice system. He had his GED. There was no indication of any psychological factor that would make him more susceptible to coercion. There's the length of the detention. He had been detained for 4 days. He had seen a judge twice during that period. This is not an instance where courts have said it's involuntary because he was held incommunicado. He was deprived of anybody else. He mused that he could get his attorney. He knew that he had ways out if he wanted it. The full interview lasted less than an hour. This court and the Supreme Court have said you look at the length and the nature of the interrogation. Interview lasted less than an hour. During that, there were at least a couple of times where he refused to make statements. The confession here came within 11 minutes of the start of the interview. The major factor that Mr. Pincus has just blown by is the fact that he was advised at the very beginning of the interview of his constitutional rights. This court and the Supreme Court have said that's a very strong factor. And finally, there was no threat. There were no threats of physical coercion. At the end, every factor, with the exception of the nature of the questioning, points towards voluntariness. Unless the court has any further questions.
Who requested the interview? Was it him? Was it Mr. Young? Because it's the second time and he aborted the first one.
That's not in the record. I would assume it was probably the FBI who were serving the arrest warrant. The one thing I would point out in bringing that up is before the promises of coercion or the promises of leniency came up, Mr. Young did ask if there was any way that he could help himself.
Had Mr. Young met his counsel yet? Had he appeared in court with his counsel?
I believe so.
Is that in the record?
The fact that he had appointed counsel was...
I know that.
The fact, whether or not he had met with him, I'm not sure that's in the record.
All right, thank you.
And thank you, counsel, for waiving the remainder of time. Appreciate it. Mr. Pincus?
What happened here, as this court said in Sharp, is that the special agent cleared the legal landmines and instead left a primrose path. When the government says there was no, that he weighed the cost of disclosure, he was told there was no cost of disclosure, and in fact that he could only benefit from disclosure. And again, one of the easiest ways to see that this statement was coerced is not only how quickly it came after the agent's promises, which shows that link, but also by comparing it to the state interrogation, at which presumably, and there's no indication to the contrary, there weren't these types of coercive and false promises of leniency. There, as soon as he was asked about the 94 grams of meth, he said, I don't want to talk, and ended the interview. Here, he very soon after confessed. And so we would ask the court to vacate the suppression order, order the statement suppressed, and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pincus. Counselor excused. The case is submitted.